Today's daf, brought to you from Yerushalayim Yir HaKodesh, is Sukkah, daf hey, and we're holding at the bottom of daf dalet omid beis. We're at the two dots, she'ina gvoa asarat vachim. That's six lines up. And the next thing that we learned in the Mishnah was that if the sukkah is not 10 tvachim high, when that means that you don't have between the floor and the bottom of the schach 10 tvachim, so then the sukkah isn't kosher. And we pointed out yesterday that even though Rava said that, look, he said to Abai, that's a dira srucha, that would not be a reason for why it is that the sukkah itself would be posel midiraisa. That wouldn't be a shear for the simple reason that it's not telling us the shear of the mechitza. How do we know that the mechitza has to be that size? We could certainly have a situation where you have a dira srucha, even though you have the mechitza asora and the schach at the proper place. That could be. But what Rava would be saying is that there's a separate psul, which would be a derabbanan possibly, but it has nothing to do with the fact that a mechitza of a sukkah has to be asara tvachim. So therefore, the Gemara asks today, where indeed do we know that 10 tvachim is the height of a sukkah? We know. So Itamar, Rav and Rabbi Hanina and Rabbi Yochanan and Rav Chaviva, we're all learning together, by the way. Sometimes that's a mistake, because the Gemara continues, as a parenthetical comment over here. By the way, Bekula Seder Moed Koki Haizuga Chiluf Rabbi Yochanan Maile Rabbi Yonatan. End of parenthetical comment. You should just know that when you're learning Seder Moed, which of course is what we're doing right now, that there are those who change the people that were involved. Because in Seder Moed, it was Rav, Rabbi Hanina, and Rabbi Yonatan that were learning together with Rav Chaviva here, and not Rabbi Yochanan. So we just, according to that version, we will always switch. Anytime you find those four people together in Seder Moed, it wasn't Rabbi Yochanan, it was Rabbi Yonatan. But anyway, getting back to what they said. Well, the makar of 10 tefachim for a sukkah is basically what we're about to do. It takes a little while to get to it. What we're about to do is to analyze the kruvim and the wings of the kruvim, and show that the wings of the kruvim are 10 tvachim above the kaporet, over the orein, and that the Torah calls that schach, because it says, sochachin b'chanfeihem. So, Mamela, you see that the Torah calls schach 10 tvachim. Now, how do we get to the idea of those measurements? Oh, so we start like this. If you analyze the height of the orein, so the Oren HaBris was 9 tvachim high, because it was Amma v'chetzi komato, and an Amma is 6 tvachim, and a half an Amma is 3 tvachim, equals 9. The Kaporet was an additional tefach, and that was on top, that sat on top of the Oren, and we're going to see how we know that the Kaporet was a tefach later, and put together the 9 and the 1, and you come out with 10. Now, it says, v'no adati lecha sham, v'dibarti itcha me'al hakaporet. So it says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to speak to Moshe Rabbeinu from on top of the kaporet. V'tanya. Now, furthermore, now this is our first take on this. We're going to see this is not enough. But our first take on this is that it says in the Braisa that Rabbi Yossi Omer, me'olam lo yarda shechina lamata, v'lo alu Moshe ve'liyo lamaron. That fundamental distinction between Shamayim v'aretz is not bridgeable, so that the Shechina is not actually ever on the surface of the earth, so to speak, and a Ben Adam is never actually in the Shamayim. So therefore, it must be that since the Shechina never has come down into where it is that the aretz is, and yet it says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu did come down, he spoke to Moshe from the top of the Kaporet. So apparently it must be that the ground level and the 10 tefachim of the Kaporet level is basically a different Rishos, which proves to us that if, in fact, the whole idea is the idea of separating between two rishuyos, so then it's a given that that must be ten tefachim, because it has to be a separation between two rishuyos, and now we're defining a rishus as being ten tefachim. So that means that in order for me to show that these two rishuyos side by side are completely separate, it would have to extend to the level of the top of that rishus, which is ten tefachim. Ask the Gemara, before we get on to why this is insufficient, ask the Gemara about the whole assumption. How could you say that? It says beferish that HaKadosh Baruch Hu came down on Har Sinai. It wasn't Har Sinai the earth. It's true, he did come down, but it never actually touched the level of the earth. There was always that difference. So lamala mi'asorat tefachim, it was above 10 tefachim from the ground, kevayachol, and it's possible, therefore, to maintain that existential distinction in even where we talk about Yerida. What about va'amdu raglav bayomahu al har hazeitim? We're talking about the geula achrona. So it says HaKadosh Baruch Hu's feet, kevayachol, will stand on Har HaZeitim. Obviously, these are all metaphors, but the idea is that the metaphor seems to be that there is an actual presence within a real physical description of Olam HaZeh. No, says the Gemara. There, too, the metaphor is still a metaphor, but it could be remembered that even metaphorically, you could be Lamala Mi'asara Tvachim. So we would still call that, that he was Omed on Har HaZeitim. But Omed would mean to be Omed hovering over it. Well, what about the other way around? Didn't Moshe and Elio, didn't they go up? I mean, it says, Moshe Allah El Elohim. Yeah, true. But there too, it means that there has to be a difference between the Asarat Tefachim. Well, what about Vayal Elio B'Sara HaShamayim? It says to the Shamayim. To the Shamayim means Lamatam Asarat Tefachim. What about Ma'achez Pnei Kisei, Parshez Alav Anano? So here Eov talks about the way that Moshe Rabbeinu was in the Shamayim, and it says that he actually was holding on to the face of the Kisei HaKavod, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu spread his Onan over Moshe. And from here, Rabbi Tanchum learned that Milamed Shepiras Shakai Miziv Shkinato Anano Alav. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave actually some of the aura of the Shekhinah, the shine of the Shekhinah, on Moshe Rabbeinu. So we're using the word parshez as enotrikin. Peiras, shakai, miziv. So this was at the time, this was, we had this back in Shabbos, and Moshe Rabbeinu went up to the Shamayim, and the Malachim were very upset. Ma enosh ki tizkerenu, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Moshe, give them a tshuva, and Moshe says, how can I start arguing with the Malachim? I'm afraid of the Esh and the Malachim. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, you can hold on to the Kisei HaKavod, and that will be able to protect you. So if it says over here that he actually was holding on to the Kisei HaKavod, so then L'chera, he was in the Shamayim literally. In other words, again, obviously the idea over here are conceptual ideas. So to be in the Shamayim means that you're no longer what I call dimensionally challenged. We're very severely dimensionally challenged. But that Moshe Rabbeinu was not dimensionally challenged at that point, so that he could actually be in a matzav where there's no relationship to the way in which we perceive reality. No, there was a difference. And over there was the equivalent of Asarat Tefachim. In other words, whatever Asarat Tefachim means in physical terms of being separated, that is what the idea is of a separation on a conceptual level, which is also, as we've always pointed out, also dimensional, because we're talking about different expressions of space. So it's a very good metaphor. Mikomako, okay, but that's all very nice, but if he put his hand in there, I mean, it says that he held on to the Kisei HaKavod. So that must mean that he's in the same place, so to speak, as the Kisei HaKavod. I mean, if he can get there and touch it, so it must be that he's there, says the Gemara. No, not necessarily, because the Kisei HaKavod itself is not necessarily a direct part of that space The kisei, because of the fact that it's a kisei, the whole point of it is that it's possible for it to be lowered and to extend to where it is that Moshe could get it. So ishtarvuve ishtarvev lekisei ad asara, so it reached within that tos 10 tvachim, and Moshe was able to grasp whatever he could understand of the kisei hakaved within his own space. Okay, fine. So now we're seeing that we've got, for granted, we've taken that the shiur would be 10 tvachim. How exactly do we know that the orein and the kaporet were 10 tvachim? I mean, I understand how I know that the orein was 9 tvachim, because it says Beferesh in the pasuk, "Ve'asu aron atzei shitim, amatayim v'chetzi orko, v'amav v'chetzi rochbo, v'amav v'chetzi komato." So an amav v'chetzi komato means, by definition, 6 plus 3. But how do I know that the kaporet was a tefach? The Torah never gives any measurements of the kaporet. Ah, that I learned out from the Braita. The Tani Rabbi Hanina, kol hakelim she'asa Moshe, natna behem Torah midat orkan, umidat rochban, umidat komatan. Basically, if you take a look at all of the kelim that we find in the Chumash, we have a very clear-cut description of what they are. But there's one thing that's very stands out as missing, because it does tell me the kaporet, the midat orka, midat rochban natna. We know exactly how long and how wide the kaporet is, because it is the kaporet that is placed on top of the aron, so it gives those measurements on top of the aron. But it doesn't say how high it was. How thick was it? Midat komato lo nitna, for some reason. So where would we derive the correct thickness, height, that is to say, of the kaporet? Seolamad bipachot shebekelim. Look, what you should learn it out from is the smallest measurement that is given. And what was the smallest measurement? The least of all of the kelim. And that is the mizgeret, which is a tefach. So it says, this benagei the shulchan, says, v'yasita lo mizgeret tofach saviv. So that means that the smallest piece that we have that's defined in a kli is one tefach. So therefore, malalan tefach, Avkam tefach. That would make sense, therefore, that we're meant to learn from there that when we talk about a piece of a kli, that piece of a kli has to be a tefach. And therefore, it's given. I mean, why would you say we should learn it from a piece of a kli? Let's learn it from the kelim themselves. And let's take the actual height of the shulchan itself. I mean, so maybe it was also 1.5 amas, right? Like the shulchan. Why like the dafka, like the tefach of the shulchan? Well, that's a general rule, which in English we talk about Occam's razor. I mean, here we use, again, a metaphor for that idea. If somebody is coming to grab a certain thing that is meant to be his, and he believes it's his, so he goes and he's osa din la'atzmo, and he grabs it. Now, if he takes more than he really was allowed to take, then they'll take it from him. And tafasta maruba lo tafasta. I mean, you look like your stomach on him. I mean, what are you walking and claiming that this is yours? And now we prove that it isn't yours. So now you're going to start arguing. You're going to say, oh, a little bit of it is mine. I mean, that's not going to change the situation of how they look at you. It's always best to be tafasta muat. That is a metaphor for the idea that whatever you can hold on to intellectually, and they cannot prove you in any way that it doesn't mean that, they can't insist that it might mean less, that you can keep. Tafas de muat, I mean, definitely that's yours. But in order to justify more, you have to have more data. So therefore, by definition, when the Torah doesn't give you the data, it means that you can only take the smallest amount. And therefore, the tofach, which is the mizgeret, is all that you have. But okay, so there are things smaller than that, though. I mean, if you're going on to tafasta, merubah lo tafasta, what gives you the right to grab the full tefach, which was the measurement of the actual mizgeret of the shulchan? Why don't we learn it out of the tzitz? The tzitz is also one of the kelim. It's called the big dekuna, are called the kelim of the kohen. And the tzitz was much smaller than a tefach. The Tanya tzitz domek mitas shel zahav, v'rachav shtei etzbaot. The tzitz was two etzbaot, which is much less than a tefach. It's a third of a tefach. And it was like a plate that was made out of gold. It would go along the forehead from one ear of the Kohen across to the other ear, even though there's a fascinating tosis over here that brings the Rivashi that it must have been on the Kohen's head and not across the forehead in front, but up on top. Whole discussion about the room for the tzitz and the room for the tefillin, and that's why we had to make the turban of the Kohen Gadol different than that of the Kohen Adyet. Okay, but it's an interesting thing. It's not for our sugya. It's not important. What's important is that we have two etzbaot. And on the tzitz, it was written in two separate lines, yud kei. So we have the shame of the yud kei vav kei, milamala, and kodesh lamed, which would kodesh le yud kei vav kei. The kodesh lamed was on the bottom line. So Tosa says this doesn't mean that it was literally one under the other, because that's not the derech of kriya. What it means was is that we split the height of the tzitz into two lines, and at the beginning of the bottom line we have kodesh lamed, and at the end of the top line we have yud kei vav kei. So it's kodesh la hashem, like that. Okay, but anyway, the question is over here, of course, not from any of that, just from the fact that it was shtei etzbaot. So why not make the Kaporet shtei etzbaot? Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yossi says, remember, I went to Rome and they had to let me into the Vatican. Remember the whole story with Pentamalion and the Caesar's daughter and this whole nasap that they sent him, and he was the only one that was able to cure her, and they let him into the Vatican over there. What became the Vatican? They let him take out whatever he wants. And meanwhile, he was looking around and he said, I saw the tzitz there that they had taken to Rome at the time of the Churban. And it's not true what you're saying. It was a tzitz and it said Kodesh LaHashem, all on one line. So what are you telling me? It was two lines. I saw it myself. Okay. But I mean, the bottom line is, of course, not the line, but I know Brené is going to come at me. The bottom line is that we've got a two etzbaot tzitz, and you're claiming that the smallest thing we could learn from was from the Misgeret Tofach. How do you get that? Danin kli mi kli ve'ein danin kli mi takshit. Basically, a kli, the shulchan is a kli. The Misgeret of the shulchan is a kli. The tzitz is not really a kli because it's only there as a decoration, and therefore it makes sense to learn it out from part of a kli. A beged is decorative more than a kli. Okay, fine. Let's learn it out from the Zer Zahav, okay? Because we learned that there were three Zerim. We had the Zer on the Shulchan, and we had the Zer on the Mizbeach HaPnim, and we had the Zer on the Orain, and the what is the height of the Zer? Mashu. So then the Kaporet could be a Mashu. So why not learn out from there? No. The Zer itself is the decoration of a kli. But it's not the etzem kli, is it? So dunin kli mi kli, ve'ina dunin kli mi hachsher kli. This is something that's basically ancillary to the kli, but it's not the etzem kli itself. They were also decorations. So I'm going to not learn out the part of the orin itself was the kaporet, and therefore I will learn it from a part of the Shulchan. So wait a minute. What do you mean a part of the Shulchan? Isn't the Misgeret of the Shulchan also decorative? I thought that the Misgeret of the Shulchan is like this fancy, gold work piece that sticks around the edge of the table to look nice. Isn't that what it is? Why is that any different than the Zer? And actually, I mean, the part of it that would stick up above the edge of the table would really be the Zer. I mean, so how can you learn from the Misgeret? So Iyachi Misgeret is also a Heksher Kli, right? And that would mean that you're going to have to find something else that is going to justify calling the Kaporet only a Tefach. No, says the Gemara, not true. The Misgeret was not decorative alone. The Misgeret was actually part of the Etzem Shulchan, the top of the Shulchan, sat on the Misgeret. The Misgeret was like underneath that provided a frame for the top to sit on. And therefore, it was really part of the Shulchan. Oh, wait a minute, says the Gemara. That itself is a machloket, isn't it? I mean, hanicha lamad yomer mizgar to lamad taitai. Yes, I mean, there is such a machlokas, I understand. If you hold like the Mand Yomer who says that the Mizgeret was beneath the top of the Shulchan, then you've justified your one tefach kaporet. But what about according to the Mand Yomer who says the Mizgeret actually was decorative and it was lamalaita? So then what are you going to say? According to him, it's certainly more decorative than being an etzim part of the Shulchan. Hai heksha klihu. So then if you're ready to learn it from the Mizgeret, you might as well go and learn it from the Zer. So we're back where we started from. How do we know that the total height of the Aron and the Kaporet was 10 tefachim? Okay, says the Gemara. All right, let's start again. The real basis is we can't learn it not from the Tzitz and not from the Zer because they are not defined in the Torah as having had a particular size. So danin davar shenatna bo Torah mida, midavar shenatna bo Torah mida. Look, even though it doesn't say how tall the kaporet was, but it does give the size of the kaporet in terms of its length and width. So therefore, it makes sense to learn out the kaporet, the third dimension of the kaporet, from other things where the Torah provided those dimensions. But if you're going to start talking about the tzitz or the zer, no dimensions were given whatsoever by the Torah for those. And it doesn't make sense to take an object that the Torah insists on a particular dimension and learn it out from an object where the Torah is not concerned with its dimension. Right? So therefore, the only thing that we have, that the smallest thing that we have that we can rely on is Mizgarto Tofach. That tofach is the tefach. That's where we're going to learn it from. Okay. Rav Huna says, I have another basis for saying that the kaporet was one tefach high. And that was that it says in the pasuk, when we're talking about the idea of taking the dam and sprinkling it in the case of the Kohen HaMashuach. So what's the halacha? Or the Kohen Gadol, what's the halacha that we had throughout Yuma, is that you put it al pnei akaporet. So it's the pnei akaporet. I don't care when you explain to me that doesn't mean that it hits the kaporet, it means in front of the kaporet. It's all very nice. But the simple meaning is that the kaporet has a pnei, it has a panim, it has a face. The use of the word face is always something that's a tefach. Ein panim pachot mi tefach. If you're talking about a face, the way we usually use it, a human face is a tefach. And therefore, if the Torah refers to it as a tefach, as a face, it must have a tefach. I mean, you say it's the face of a human. I mean, maybe it's the face of a bar yuchani. Remember that the Kruvim had wings, right? So they were sort of bird-like. So if they were bird-like, so maybe they had the idea of the face in that context would be the Bar Yochani. Remember, the Bar Yochani was this mythical bird that was so big that it laid an egg, and it's the egg cracked and it submerged 60 towns. And the whole story, Rabbi Bar Bachana, right? So it broke down a forest that had 300 trees just from laying the egg. I mean, fine, obviously 300 itself tells you the whole thing is metaphorical, but the idea is that a Bar Yochani is, at least on some level, it's got to be bigger than a Tefach, right? Well, there too, Tafasta Meruba lo Tafasta, Tafasta Mua Tafasta. So therefore, we should go to a human face and not to a Bar Yochani face. Got a lot of Tafasta Merubas here, huh? The Ema, Abba Apeditziparta. So maybe it means a hummingbird face, you know? I mean, it could be tiny. If it's bird-like, and that's really small, the Zuta Tuva. Rav Huna wasn't just saying tafasta maruba. Rav Huna was learning out the word pnei from the other place, gezerah shavah, of another pnei. It wasn't just like we assume it. It was a real gezerah shavah. Ktiva acha el pnei akaporet uktivata me et pnei yitzchak aviv. So basically, we know that it's referring specifically to the panim of a human being, of Yitzchak Avinu. There are other places where it says pnei, and how do you know the Gezeirah Shavah is not there? Maybe we should learn it from panim, the way we find panim referring to something much larger than a human face. Maybe panim shamala. Maybe it's the panima of an angel of some kind, you know? Because doesn't it say when Yaakov Avinu was talking to Esav, he says, "Kirot pnei Elohim vatirtzeni." Pnei Elohim can certainly be bigger than a tefach. So what makes you say that it's the panim of the Yitzchak Avinu? Back again to tafasta meruba lo tafasta, tafasta mua tafasta. You might become suspicious that something interesting is going on here. Anyway, as the Gemara, why don't we learn it directly from the Kruvim? So the Kruv, it says, El HaKaporet, Yiyu Pnei HaKiruvim. So maybe it's a reference even to the Kruvim themselves, and that would be small faces, right? I mean, it's like basically a design on top of the kaporet. So in the context of the kaporet that's holding the kruvim, it would make sense that the pnei is the pnei of the kruvim themselves. So maybe it was less than a tefach. I mean, we're assuming that if the kruv is only 10 tefachim high, so then that's not the normal height of a human being. So in that's the case, so then a kruv is smaller than a normal human face, right? Omer of Acha Bar Yaakov, no. We have a Kabbalah that ein pnei akruvim pchuti mitefach. That actually, the face of the kruv was a tefach, and that is where Ravuna actually was learning it from. Not what you thought was a kasha, pnei, pnei, and that therefore we should find a different pnei which is smaller. On the contrary, because of the Kabbalah that we have of the size of the kruv's face, Ravuna actually learned pnei from the panim of the Kruvim themselves. Fine. So what we're talking about is the idea from the Pnei HaKruvim, each one being a Tefach. What is the meaning of a Kruv? Kiruv. Omer Rabbi Abo, Kiruv means Kiravya. It means like a child. Shekein B'Bavel Korim Lianuka Ravya. They would call in Bavel, they would call a child, a ravya, meaning a growing thing, right? He's in the process of growing. So a kiravya would be the face of the youthfulness of a child, not just the child. Omale Abaye, wait, how could that be? But a child is human, isn't he? Well, maybe not if he's a teenager, but all right. But a child is supposedly human. So then how do you explain the Merkava, that the Merkava had one face of, remember that we had the Chayos, so the Chayos have these four different faces. So we have Pnei Echad, Pnei Kruv, Upnei Hasheni, Pnei Adam. But you just said that the Kruv is human. So how could we have two different faces on the Chayos, one of them being a human face and one of them being a Kruv face? I mean, this is why I always assumed it was maybe some kind of bird or something like that. But now that you're claiming that it's Kiravya, then the whole story of the Merkava doesn't make sense, because then we're basically dealing with the same face. Hainu Kruv, Hainu Adam. Answers the Gemara, there's a difference between Ape Ravrave the Ape Zutre. An adult has the face of an adult, which we call Ape Ravrave. And a child has the face of a child, which we call Ape Zutra. Of course, Kabbalistically, this became the entire difference between Ze'er Anpin and Arich Anpin. Ze'er Anpin means Ape Zutra. Arich Anpin means Ape Ravrave. And this is the difference between the Hanhoga of HaKadosh Baruch Hu on these two different levels, which are very, very basic in terms of understanding the Hanhoga of the Midas of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Obviously, the entire thing, I mean, that doesn't even need saying, that the whole point of the Merkava is the Hanhoga Sashchina, and that therefore, when we find the various faces that are on their Merkava, so then what we're talking about is faces, in exactly the way that we use the word face in terms of human relationship, there is a basic interrelationship that's defined by the interface, That's called an interface for that reason. So the interface would be the Api Rav Revei Api Zutri. And those are obviously very, very different ways. If you're relating to the Shechina in terms of Kruvim, or you're relating to the Shechina in terms of adulthood. So this is, we wouldn't even call it Shechina, actually. Okay, in any event, so we've now seen what? That the you've proven to me that the Orein and the Kaporas together were ten Tfachim. And from there, you're going to learn that it must be that the Sukkah needs to be ten Tfachim high. But that doesn't follow. So Zigmar, how does that follow? All that follows here is the fact that you've got this building, which includes the goof of the Kruvim and which goes to the down to the Kaporet, and we're learning out from the Kaporet level down to the ground as ten Tfachim. Means that the mechitza has to be ten tefachim, but there's a big problem here. The kaporet was not just high. The kaporet was thick. It was solid. It wasn't like a box cover. So if it's solid, that means that the ten tefachim should include the schach. Because what you're not learning out that you need an empty space of ten tefachim from the orein. You're only learning out that you have basically a pillar of 10 tefachim, 9 tefachim of which you could say are hollow. But how do you learn out from here that the sukkah has to be 10 tefachim hollow on the inside? That doesn't follow, and that's what our Mishnah insists. It's talking about the empty space of the sukkah that has to be 10 tefachim high up until the schach. That would mean that the orein would have to be 10 tefachim high up until the kaporet, but that isn't the case. So if we're going to learn it from there, so mimai dechalala asara bar misechacha, what makes you say, therefore, that you have a right to apply the entire external ten tefachim to the internal measurements of the sukkah? That doesn't even follow. Maybe it would mean bahadi sechacha, just like the orein. It means that the entire sukkah measured from the outside, including the schach, would be like the orein and the kaporas. That's what would follow, the way I see it. If you're really going to learn it from there. So, okay. The truth is that we can learn the concept of a separate height, which means a separate dimension from there, which would mean that a mechitza indeed would need to be asara tefachim. But we're stuck with this problem because why can't we make a mechitza of asara tefachim and then put the schach down till the top of that mechitza, and then we would be yotzi both things. So, I mean, the most that you could say there is that Rava, if Rava claims that that's called a dira srucha simply because of the height, right? Now, here's where we get into the problem of Rava. But remember, there's a heck of a difference between being in a small area that has a top that is, let's say, 9.5 tefachim above your ground level, or being in something that has a top that's 10 tefachim above your ground level, but has little pieces hanging down so that every time you move, you get hit with something that's lying down. I mean, the fact that Rava said it was a dira srucha in the case of the leaves hanging down into the sukkah does not necessarily define the space, does it? And even if it would that be a makor for the diraisa that we're saying is a psul of the sukkah? I mean, it would be a dirasrucha. You could say, so you'll leave your sukkah. So it goes there. We don't want you to leave your sukkah, like we'll see later on, those type of gezeras. So therefore, no matter how you look at it, even if you want to take it step by step and say that, well, obviously, Rava can't define the nature of mechitza from his idea of dirasrucha. And even if you'd want to say that Rava could define the space available, although that doesn't necessarily follow because maybe it's just the inconvenience of having the hutsin that are yard in the Toch HaSara. But even if you'd want to say that, you still wouldn't be able to define the Diraisa as being a sukkah where Chalola is HaSara. And we seem to be learning that idea itself from the relationship of the Orein and the Kruvim. And in fact, what the Gemara is really doing over here is it's taking as a given that the makor of the concept of the sukkah is the Beis HaMikdash. Remember when we learned the ideas of the measurements back in Erevin, and we started talking about the Pischa Shel Heichal or the Pischa Shel Ulam? That's not a coincidence that we're here learning all of these dinim out of the Beis HaMikdash. Remember, the Beis HaMikdash is called Sukkas Shalom, one of the words for the Beis HaMikdash. And the fundamental sochechim, in which the concept of the sukkah's protection that we have from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and to be b'tzela dem b'mnusa, is called sochechim b'chanfehem. So it's a given to the Gemara in all of these sugyas that the Beis HaMikdash, which is relevant to this time of the year, that the Beis HaMikdash is the mikar of the concept of what it is to be Betzel, and what a mechitza really means, and what dimensions really mean, and what a bias, which is the nature of sukkah, really means, and so on. The question over here is which particular aspect within the Beis HaMikdash and of that structure where HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes and speaks to us, me'al ha'kaporas, which particular element do we learn from? So even though we're going to now switch the limud, it should not strike you as, wow, what a coincidence. Instead of learning from the inside of the Aron, now we're going to learn from the top of the Aron and the relationship of the Kruvim's wings to the bottom of the Kaporet. It's not a coincidence. It's that this has been our focus all along. So therefore, to take a look at how we know that the internal measurements of a sukkah need to be the Asara, let's learn it out by looking at the Beis HaMikdash and then translating what's given to us about the Beis HaMikdash into the Mishkan. We learn it out from the Beit Olamim. The Beit Olamim is the Beis HaMikdash. We're over there. We know that it says, Abayit asher bana ha-melech shalomo la-Hashem, shishima ma-orko, esrim rochbo, u-shloshima ma-kamoto. So how tall was the Beis HaMikdash of Shlomo HaMelech? It was 30 amot high on its lower level. Uchtiv komata kruve echad. Now remember that Shlomo HaMelech also put kruvim down on the ground, besides the kruvim that were on the kaporet. So it says over there, the height of his kruvim on each side was 10 amot high, to the right and to the left of the Aron HaBris. And so if that's the case, just as the Braita explains, ma matzinu bebeit olamim kruvim b'shlish habayit ein omdim, in the same way that the height of a kruv was 10 amot in a building which was 30 amot high, and that means that it took up one third of the available height, in the Mishkan, it's exactly the same. Mishkan nami, because obviously what Shlomo HaMelech was doing was extrapolating from the Mishkan. And therefore, this means that the Mishkan, the kruvim, were b'shlish habayit ayu omdim. So obviously, the idea over here is that we're going to have to learn out translating those dimensions into the Mishkan. Now, let's take a look at the Mishkan. The Mishkan wasn't 30 amos high. The Mishkan was 10 amos high. How do we know that? It says beferish. Eser amot orech ha-koresh, the koresh. The length of a koresh is 10 amot, and that became the height of the Mishkan, right? How many tvachim is eser amot? 6 times 10. Okay, that's 60 tvachim. Now, you're telling me that the height of the kruv got up to one-third of the bayit. How much is one-third of 60? 20. So that means that the top of the kruvim were 20 tvachim from the bottom of the Mishkan, from the floor level. Now, they were not standing on the floor level. They were standing on the kaporet. So deduct the 10 tvachim that we already proved of the Aron of the kaporet. And how much was there between the top of the kruv and the level of the kaporet? 10 tvachim, right? From the top and down to the bottom. And we see that the Torah calls those 10 tvachim the area which schach has to be on top of. Because it says, Vayu akiruvim porseichen afayim lemala sochechim sukkah, sochechim bechanfeim al hakaporet. So therefore, they provided the shelter of their knafayim, which were lamala, which were above that space. And therefore, as we're going to see, that means that you need 10 tvachim in the fundamental definition of Schach. Amazing. So by putting together the Beis HaMikdash, the Kalim of the Mishkan, and the interrelationship of the height of the Mishkan and the height of the Beis HaMikdash, both in terms of the two different types of extrapolated Kruvim or original Kruvim, we now discover the nature of Schach. Oh, wow. Okay. But wait a minute. How do you know that the Kruvim's wings covered over 10 tefachim of space? Maybe the wings were the same height as the head. And that would mean that they were 10 tefachim. We'd have the same problem. From the outside, they were 10 tefachim, including the wing thickness itself. So, what gives you the idea that these wings were spread above that level, above their head, so that there were 10 tefachim of air underneath? Maybe they were the same height. So they had the Kruvim's wings were extended to head level, and therefore there were 10 tefachim, including those wings. Omer of Akabayagu, it says Lamala. Lamala means above those dimensions that were just given. So, I mean, if it's Lamala, maybe it's more than 10 tefachim. I don't know. It doesn't mean that it was just right above their heads. I mean, it could mean maybe it was 20 feet above their head. No. If it would have meant that, it would have told you that it was above the level that is called above. If it only tells you above, so then it means it's just above. Because that's all that I'm giving you, and I'm making you recognize that I'm not trying to give you a sense of having the wings flying up to the sky. Oh, okay. So this is great, except we got a problem. The problem is that our original measurements might be totally off. Because remember, we have a big machlokus about how many tefachim there are in the amot of the kelim of the Beis HaMikdash. Now, we've been assuming that the amot over here, the standard amma of six tefachim, which is a given in the Mishkan, but it's not a given in the kelim. So all of this works out very well according to Rabbi Meir, who says that all of the amma, any unit that's given in an amma in the Mishkan, whether it's talking about the height of the Mishkan per se, whether it's talking about the Kalim, they're all the same. They are amot beinoniot, except for very special cases that we spoke about in the Gemara Menachos, we've talked about. We're over there, we talked about the Mizbeach HaChitzon in terms of the Yesod, the Sovev, and things like that. But generally speaking, the Kalim were the same exact amma. Okay, then you just proved it. But what about according to Rabbi Yehuda? Rabbi Yehuda says, it's true that the Amma Shel Binyan, the Mishkan itself, was definitely six tefachim standard Amma. But all of the Kalim mentioned in the Mishkan were only five tefachim in the Amma, which is the smaller Amma. So what are you going to do with him? According to him, start over again, okay? How tall is the Orein, which is 1.5 Ammas? 8.5 tefachim. That's 5. Plus the 2.5, plus the 1, it's 8.5. Okay, so now you're left with 11.5 tefachim, not 10 tefachim. So therefore, a sukkah should require, according to Rabbi Yehuda, a minimum of 11.5 tefachim by virtue of exactly the same limud that you just learned, but by putting in the dimensions, I'll leave it to Rabbi Yehuda. So what the heck is going on? You're right. According to Rabbi Yehuda, we do not really have a mocker from the Oren and the Kruvim. And according to Rabbi Yehuda, the din of 10 tefachim is entirely halacha l'meshem Sinai. It does not have any mokar of ramazim in the pasuk. Rabbi Yehuda hilchot gemirala, and it's pure halacha l'meshem Sinai. The Yom Rav Chiya Barashi Amar Rav Shiurin Chatzitzin Umechitzin halacha l'meshem Sinai. So the measurements of all of the various halachas for tuma and for Yisrach, for achila, and so on. And the idea of chatzitza, what constitutes chatzitza for tefillah, and mechitzas, aha, the 10th tefachim of mechitza. All of these things are halacha l'meshem Sinai, and therefore I certainly am very sympathetic towards your trying to find a mocker in the Torah. We always look for remozim in the Torah for those issues that we have basically as halacha l'meshem Sinai. However, I unfortunately cannot agree with your brilliant exposition because it doesn't work out according to me.